Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah.
alive to Called to Serve on Tribe Family Channel. We are gathered together for a special military tribute. The United States Air Force Reserve celebrates its birthday every year on April 14th. The Army Reserve celebrates their birthday Saturday, April 23rd, 2022. We have Army veterans that will be joining this show. This is produced by Ms. Daisy Brown, Army Reserve veteran. And joining Daisy Brown will be Mr. Clarence Tiger Davis and Mr. Donald L. Williams, Jr. The United States Army Reserve celebrates its 114th birthday in 2022. That century-plus milestone is a significant achievement for what the Army Reserve official site describes as the most capable, combat-ready, and lethal Federal Reserve force in the history of the nation. And while the United States Marine Corps Reserve might take a bit of exception to that statement, there is no denying that the Army Reserve has played a very important role in American military history. The Army Reserve celebrates on April 23rd contributions to two world wars, the Cold War, Korea, Vietnam, Persian, Gulf War, and many other missions. There are Army Reserve communities located in every state in the Union, plus the District of Columbia, Guam, American Samoa, Puerto Rico, and the United States Virgin Islands. Reservists have deployed to roughly 30 countries. Ladies and gentlemen, live on Tribe Family Channel, it is an honor, privilege, and a pleasure to present the Army veterans that are joining Daisy Brown, Mr. Davis, and Mr. Williams. And now I turn you over to Ms. Daisy Brown. Welcome, gentlemen. Welcome, Daisy. Have an exciting show.
Good evening, everyone. Wow, what an introduction. I am just so excited because, Tiger, you know I love you so much.
Love
and,
you back.
And, I mean, our other guests, my, I've heard so much about you. I'm just excited. I just don't even know what to say. This is just so wonderful to be doing this right before the resurrection. And, oh, my God, this is just fantastic. I'm going to just stop talking, and I'm going to let you guys go for it. Do your thing and just tell us whatever it is you need to tell us, and I'm going to just sit back here and absorb all of this good stuff.
Well, I'll go ahead and kick it off because, you know, one of the things I'm always discussing whenever the opportunity presents itself is the role that the military has played and moving America towards a more perfect union. You know, most social change begin with the military. For instance, April of Randolph in 1941 threatened the march on Washington. If Franklin Delano Roosevelt did not do something to remove discrimination from employment where federal contracts were involved. All of this work in 1941 led to the Tuskegee Airmen and it led to blacks being in the Marine Corps. But A. Philip Randolph didn't stop there. He and Grant Reynolds and others formed what called the Committee to End Jim Crow in the Armed Forces. And by 1948, Harry S. Truman had issued Executive Order 9981, which prohibited discrimination in the military, and it called for equal treatment or what have you. And so the military has always been the lead organization in bringing about social change. And so I think it's appropriate that we recognize all units of the military reserve, whether it be Naval Reserves, Army, or Marine Reserves, or Air Force Reserve for that matter, because the military, like I said, has played such an important role in all of the social change that has taken place in America. Now, they did this while arguing that the military is not the place for social engineers, you know. And, you know, it argued against it, but at the same time, they took the appropriate action, which brought about change, not only in the military, but that change led to a change in society. For example, even though Truman's executive order was issued on July 26, 1948, nothing really happened until the Korean War broke out. And in the middle of the Korean War, the United States military began to desegregate in the middle of a war. And it worked. The war ends in July of 1953. And less than a year later, you get Brown versus Board of Education, which resulted in the desegregation of public schools, you know, in this country. That would not have occurred had the experiment or the initiatives in the military had not gone well. And so the military has always been in the forefront. Even if you look at the issue regarding gender, it has always been the military that has always been out front. And at the same time, like I said previously, the military hated the role, but yet they stood tall and brought about that change. And so I'm real proud to be here to talk about the military.
Wow, that's wonderful.
Please tell our audience what your background is, and then Mr. Donald L. Williams Jr. will come in and have words and give us his background. Let our audience know who is Mr. Clarence Tiger Davis.
Well, I guess, first of all, I was a history professor, but I spent 24 years in the Maryland House of Delegates. I was elected 6 straight times, and then I retired. So, you know, I've been in the forefront ever since I returned home from the military, because my first day home from the military, I was arrested because I refused to be called a boy. And I ended up going to jail because of that. And so from that particular point on, you know, civil rights and the rights of our people became paramount in my view of the world. One of the things that I continually press upon our community is that we need to know the truth about history, and not what they show us during Black History Month.
No
disrespect to Martin Luther King or Rosa Parks or any of them, but, you know, we get Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks to death between January and February. And so a lot of the other history that's pertinent is never discussed. Let me give you an example, since we just passed over Women's History Month. Two of the greatest ladies in the history of African-American people are two females, both military. Debbie Johnson Rountree was one of the first female officers, period, white or black, in the new Women's Army Corps, right? Debbie Johnson Rountree. After her military service, she had a degree. She went on to law school. One of her first major cases was the case of Sarah Louise Keyes, a black lady who was traveling on the Carolina coach company. And when they got to D.C., she was told she had to get up out of her seat and go to the back of the bus and let that white Marine have that seat. She refused. She ended up eventually going to jail and having to pay a $25 fine. This was 1952. And so it took the case three years before it got had the final conclusion with the Interstate Commerce Commission. And she won that case, and the case is called Sarah Keys versus Carolina Coach Company. Now, this was long before Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King, okay, and their initiative. Now, these are both black females in the United States military who stood up for their people. One who was on that front line with that bus company, and the other one who utilized her GI Bill benefits to go to law school to become a civil rights lawyer. But she was also a minister, too. She was a good minister with the African Methodist Episcopal Church. But I remember her from the many legal cases that she took, some of which she only received a dollar payment because it was never about the money for her. It was about the mission of being a lawyer and representing African-American people. And so Debbie Johnson, who died in 2018, is a lady, Debbie Johnson Roundtree. She should be remembered by all of us. And so if we don't tell this story, you know, then who will? I tend to focus most of my storytelling on blacks within the military, whether it be male or female. I try to stay within that area because I want people to understand the important role that blacks who served in the military played in the liberation of African people in general and the society. It's written all over our history, but no one ever talks about it because we'd rather look the other way when it comes to the military. But in doing so, we miss knowing about people like Charles Hamilton Houston, who was a young lieutenant in World War One, who came home and went to law school and eventually built Howard University's law school into one of the finest constitutional law schools in this country, which then laid the foundation for all of the civil rights cases that Thurgood Marshall and others would fight. And so, you know, if we look at the military, we will see all of our history there, a great history that's totally ignored. And why, you know, it beats me. But anyway, that's my thing. I don't want to take up too much of your time because I won't give up.
Well, you know, Ms. Daisy Brown had informed us that you have quite quite a bit of history knowledge, and we really appreciate you being on the platform. I don't think any of us want to speak after you after that. But come on, y'all, we got to get up the gumption now. And I do want to give some words of housekeeping. The moderator can't handle any jokes. So when you say stuff like they're going to Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks us to death, we're going to lose the moderator to laughter. So be ready to take over the show. And now, Mr. Donald L. Williams, Jr., step up to the microphone, sir, because, yes, welcome, meet Daisy Brown, meet Clarence Davis, and tell us who you are and expound on what you would like to do.
All right. Well, first of all, I give an honor to God. I'm glad to be a part of the show. I don't have quite the resume that Charles has. However, I joined the military straight out of high school with the intention of just staying in there for 4 years, learning to become a mechanic, and getting out and having my own 18-wheeler. But I was having such a good time that I was like, I can do this and retire and still do the truck. I ended up staying a total of 15 years active duty Army. And
wow.
I reached my reached my retention control point for the grade of sergeant promotable, which meant that I couldn't reenlist any longer. They gave me severance pay and said, have a good day. I then thought, you know what, hey, let's just go ahead and do the reserve and retire that way. So I spent the year in the Army Reserve, and coming off of active duty and going into reserve for me was just night and day, and it was nothing that I could get used to, everybody calling each other by their first names. And I'll tell you today, when I was in the military, my first name, Sergeant, last name, Williams. So after a year, I decided, you know what, I'm going to hang this up. I can truly say that those 15 years were some of the greatest years of my life. I was married during the time frame. My son, he actually traveled to Germany after I returned from Desert Storm, and he was over there, and that's a memory that he'll never forget, being a young kid over in Germany. So I attribute a lot of who I am because and due to the military.
Wow.
I really appreciate that, Donald, because I will tell anyone that the 4 years I spent in the military were four of the best years of my life. I was 17 when I went in. I had to get away, wanted to get away from home. I graduated from high school. I had many different options, but I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. But in the military followed up with that discipline that I had received from my mother.
I know about that.
Military freeze for me because I come out of my mother's home where she was the best first sergeant anyone could ever ask for. But at any rate, I spent those 4 years, and I grew up. I like to say I grew up in the military because this was my first experience of any kind of integration whatsoever, because I had – I grew up in Baltimore. I was born in Georgia, but I grew up in Baltimore. And I had never had many encounters with whites other than through interclassic sports. And we didn't even integrate the football conferences until I was in my junior year, in high school. So I had very little experience with non-African people. And so the military gave me that opportunity to engage others. Now, I went into that experience understanding clearly what we had been taught, that, black folks, you've got to be twice as good as white people to make it in this world, and 1, 2, 3, 4 and all of that. And so I would never allow anyone to be better than me in anything. Okay, because that's the way I was programmed. And, this experience that I had in the military gave me a keen view of what the other world was like. I saw the officers, and then I saw the enlisted men. But one of the things that the military did for me, it reinforced my sense of black people being better than whites. Okay, because that's the way I was programmed. You got to be twice as good. Now, inherent in that is a belief that you're superior to the other group. And whenever I'd encounter white people, I always encountered people I thought were inferior. And that is because I never understood at that time that only the lower socioeconomic order of the white would go into the military, because the others would avoid the draft and get college deferments and all that kind of stuff, right? And so I never understood that I was dealing with the lower echelon of whites. And so I just took for granted that they were representative of all white people, which meant from through my eyes, white people were always stupid, you know, and the military just reinforced that because they could not outdo us in anything. I don't care what it was, okay? And so the military enabled me to grow up, and I gained the respect for people that I viewed as being inferior to black people, you know, because, man, look, man, we had some dumbass white boys, excuse my language, lady, but we had some dumb white boys in the military, you know, and, you know, some of them couldn't read or write or what have you. And in the Air Force, you know, you had to pass these exams to go, I wonder how did these white boys get into the military if they had to pass those exams? You know, which once again showed me that, you know, we were held to a different standard than our white counterparts, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But not matter, I knew I could not come up short on anything because I could never allow whites to outdo me in anything. I don't care whether it was tiddlywinks, running, or whatever, and I couldn't run at all, but I couldn't let white people outrun me. You know, I mean, that's just the way we were brought up mentally. You know, when we played football in high school, you know, well, let me get off that for a minute. Cause, we beat them at everything.
Well, hold your thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. I didn't know we were going to have any type of comedy, but enjoy it because I love it. You haven't lost me yet, so hold on, and we'll be right back after this brief song.
Hey, Donald, nice knee there, man.
Likewise.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife, I thank my lucky stars to be living here today. But the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American. Men who died, who gave that fight to me, and I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, but there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to L.A., where there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say, there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Daisy V. Brown is an honorably discharged veteran of the U.S. Army Reserve, in which she served from 1976 through 1983. She worked in the accounting office and later transferred to become the chaplain's assistant until she was discharged. When not serving in the Army Reserve, Daisy worked full-time as a legal secretary and medical office manager / transcriptionist. She retired in 2015 after having worked since 1969 with several successful firms. Prior to entering the workforce, Daisy attended Morgan State University, where she majored in home economics. In 1971, she became a part of the Shy Lights organization and served in several capacities, including road manager. She met and managed many artists thereafter, including Archie Bell, the legendary Brooklyn All-Stars, recorded songs penned by Daisy, including the ever-popular You Were Their Mother. In 2004, she became a life member of the Associates of the Vietnam Veterans. She joined TRIA, the Enlisted Association, Chapter 9 in 2012 and has served as its secretary since joining. She currently produces soulful music with Marshall Thompson, the last man standing of the Shy Lights, and continues traveling the world when they go on the road. She serves as management to Clyde Anthony, formerly of Archie Bell and the Drells. He has a new CD coming out this year, so be on the lookout. She is also the executive producer and host of Called to Serve Military Radio Show. In her spare time, she enjoys sewing, arts and crafts, writing poetry, cooking, photography, and videography. In June 2019, Daisy joined the American Legion's Post 285 to serve as its secretary. She was also appointed secretary to the Senior Citizens League in September of 2019. She looks forward to many years of dedicated service, and she is also a friend and mentee to the Reverend Dr. Joseph Jackson Jr., the leader of the Tougaloo Nine, led, trained, and mentored by the great late Megger Wiley Evers, who is celebrating his 85th birthday today. We wish him all the best. And now we turn you back over live on Tribe Family Channel, Call to Serve with Daisy Brown.
Hello again. Wow, I'm in awe. I'm truly in awe, and I'm just so excited because I've got two wonderful gentlemen here with me today, along with the wonderful, lovely Beverly Black. And it's just wow, what a way to get into the Easter season, to celebrate the anniversaries of the military. And this is April is Military Month here, and tomorrow is Military Children's Day. And we're asking everyone who can wear some purple to celebrate Military Children's Day. And now we're back to our guest.
Daisy, next month is Armed Forces Day. And one of the things that I've always wanted, and always, you know, I wanted the military to step forward and take its rightful place in all of society. For example, you know, when we came home from the military, we were made to feel ashamed of our military service. you know, this is in the 60s to 70s, right? We had to justify to people why we served in the military. You know, they would say, you know, you're over here killing yellow people for white people and all that kind of stuff, you know. And so what we had to do, because they were dogging out American, so our response to them was this: do not judge America by where America stands today, but rather how far America has traveled. And, you know, once you look at it from that perspective, then you can see how America gradually moves towards a more perfect union, just like it says in our preamble, a more perfect union. And so my point to a lot of the young people is, what are you doing to move America towards a more perfect union? You know, this is ours. You got to take ownership of this thing here, you know, and you've got to make some kind of contribution. You know, nothing is perfect. I look at the world that I was born into in 1942, Georgia, you know, where the Ku Klux Klan could ride at will to do whatever they want. This ain't the America today. I look how America has traveled. You look at TV when I was coming up, you know, hey, we was lucky to see Sammy Davis Jr. every now and then on Eddie Cantor's Hour or what have you. You know, we never saw any blacks. But when you look at all of the changes that have occurred in America, they have occurred because of the struggle of a lot of people and the commitment of a lot of people to building that American dream, or the America that we think America ought to be. And so while, you know, it's fashionable to be negative about a lot of things, I raise the question to those folks who are negative about so many things about them: what are you doing to make this a more perfect union, you know? And this is what I say to all of them. And I can lay out the role of the military in making this a more perfect union. Or people like Medgar Evers, World War II veteran, or Ben Hooks, World War II veteran, Perrin Mitchell, you know, Mayor Harold Washington of Chicago, Dinkins of New York, one of the first black men. I could tell the story of all of these people who served in the military, who came home from the military and worked toward making this a more perfect union. Not only did they make sacrifices in the military, but they came home and sacrificed their lives to make America a better place. And for those people who have nothing but negatives or what have you coming out of their mouth, they need to take a look at themselves and ask themselves, what have I done to make this a more perfect union? And so, you know, this is why I fell in love with history. And I try to tell history as it really happened. This is why I want people to look at things beyond Martin Luther King or Rosa Parks, and especially as it relates to the role that people in the military have played to make this a more perfect union. For instance, anyone who's listening, write down that name, W-D-O-V-E-Y, Johnson Roundtree. Look it up, and you will see one of the finest attorneys that has ever practiced law in these United States. Look at Sarah Keyes, and you will see one of the most courageous ladies that I have ever encountered. Can you imagine what it must have been like for the bus driver to tell this black woman to get up out that seat and let that white boy Marine have that seat? What courage. I mean, look at that courage in this woman. And so I want people to know about that, you know, and I want people to know the whole role of our people in building this country. Like, for instance, in 1851, William Cooper Nell writes his dissertation on the services of colored Americans in the wars of 1776, 1812. Most of our people have no idea of our folk who fought in the Revolutionary War. And we had close to 9,000 blacks fighting on the side of the rebels, and then about another 9,000, what you might call loyalists, fighting with the British. What happened to those people who fought with the British? I mean, these are things that we need to know about, but for some reason we keep waiting for somebody else to teach us our own history. And that's criminal, because we need to be teaching our own history and telling our own story through our eyes. And so,
where is your book?
I went to HBCU.
Tiger, where is
yes,
your
ma'am.
Book? We need your book. Where is your book?
Well, I can tell you about everybody else's book, okay? I've got enough material I've written.
We need your book.
I can put together a book. I love talking about our history, and I love talking about America too. Because I've got some good critiques of America. Okay, a lot of good criticism, but at the same time, if I'm going to criticize America, I also have to criticize myself on what I have done to make this a better place. Medgar Evers did his time in the military. Look at what he did. He came home and gave his life, didn't he?
Look at it.
I mean, you know, I admire people like him. Even if you look at people like Jill Carter, you know, Senator Jill Carter, her dad, Walter D. Carter. You know, he was World War II, you know, as well. I look at Walter Brooks and others who were World War II and Korea. You know, I look at all that they have done to make this place. And I have to ask myself, what have you done, Tiger? What have you done? You know, I have not done enough, but I'm going to continue to work until I, you know, to my last breath, okay?
Amen. Let's have some words from Mr. Donald L. Williams on that note. What have you done? And what will you continue to do in your life work?
I stand in shadow of Mr. Tiger with all that he's done. However, the race is not over as long as you're still running.
Amen.
And with that being said, I am a child of God who has been gifted with the ability to convey heartfelt feelings from those who can't speak the words themselves. I am actually working on converting one of my earlier poems into a children's book. I guess you could say I'm following the footsteps of my late uncle, who was a Vietnam veteran on a landmine, and by the grace of God, listened to the voice saying, "Jump this way and you shall live." And he did. And he did.
Wow.
And, yeah, they actually wanted to amputate his leg, and he says, "No, I'm not going to allow you to amputate my leg. I'm going to get better. God has told me that I will get better." And he did get better. I will never forget, as a child, when my uncle was actually able to walk, he didn't stop there. He actually played basketball with us when we were children. So he actually about 15 years ago wrote his autobiography, From Death Unto Life. And I told him before he passed, I said, "I want to make sure that your story makes the big screen." So that's another one of the goals that I have for myself, to let the world know what he saw through his eyes growing up in a prejudiced America with a name associated with being white, because my mother's maiden name is Darty. Very Irish, but we are not Irish. So that is something that I'm looking forward to completing, hopefully within the next short time.
Well, just
so may I apply for one of the goals?
Those stories need to be told.
Yes, yes. God knows. That's the truth. You know, it's amazing how so there are so many things that have happened in our lives or in our parents' lives that should have been shared, or they're just hidden treasures. They're hidden jewels. And it's just amazing the contributions that if you really sit down and start talking about it, you'd be surprised at some of the experiences that we have encountered. And it's by the grace of God that, you know, we survived a lot of these things.
And, you know, I was fortunate to have grown up in the shadows of World War II veterans. You know, I was born in 1942. My uncle was killed in Germany, you know, and so my mother had three brothers serving, two of them, one of them ended up getting killed. But I had the chance to grow up in that environment and then watch that little brother, my Uncle Paul, go into the Korean War and end up coming home all messed up from the Korean War. So I had those experiences, and I've always looked up to those persons who have served in the military. And the older I got, the more I appreciated all that they had done. I mean, you look at a guy like Perrin Mitchell. Perrin Mitchell became a disabled veteran, wounded in Italy, you know, with the 92nd Infantry Division. But look at what he did with his life. And, you know, he dedicated his life to his community and his people. And really, when you say his community and people, he dedicated his life to making America a better place, because all of us, if we believe in what we were taught, then we believe that we should be moving America towards a more perfect union. And that's all we can ask for. You know, nothing's perfect out here. There are too many people who look and find things wrong, then they just want to dog out. Well, no, what are we doing to make this better? You know, and this is what I try to get the younger people to see, because what has happened to our young people is their hopes and aspirations for the future has been dashed by all the negativism, saying that the black can't do this or you can't do that or what have you, or the system is against you and all that kind of stuff. No, the only person against you is that person in the mirror, you know, and so somehow we have to you know, get our young people to see that it is them and their choices that will determine their fate in this world, not some system of racism or whatever. That cannot determine our future. It didn't determine mine, you know, but it was the choices that I made along the way. And our children today have an opportunity to reach all kinds of heights that none of us in my generation have even thought of, you know. Sure. And so we have to give our children hope. And unfortunately, there's too many negatives out there to give them that hope that they need.
You know, I respect what you have to say. And I have this to say in response. And this is not just our people. It's buildings, it's life, and it's everything. Nothing stands without a strong foundation. If you can't start those children off with the right foundation, then there'll be cracks in their walls. Those walls can be repaired, but you first have to build the right foundation. And I'll use my sister, who is 15 months younger than I, and she had two children, both of them very well educated. My nephew, not only did he graduate high school with 13 schools that were offering scholarships, he went to college, became a mechanical engineer, and decided, you know what, there's more out there. He turned around and went back to school and got his law degree. So now he is a double degreed young man who is only 30 years old.
Wow.
So my sister laid the foundation for them to be better. And that's where it all begins.
Amen.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
No question. But, you know, the story for a lot of our kids today is that they don't have that kind of foundation. But even if they do not have that kind of foundation, we have to rekindle that belief that here in America, all things are possible. And if you work hard to achieve, you will achieve and break through any kind of barriers. And that's the America that I know. You know, I talk to people oftentimes. I say, look, I could have done anything I wanted to here in America, right? You know, I made choices. And I have to live with those choices that I made. I didn't go to law school, but I didn't go to law school because I got wrapped up into that black history or the black studies of the late 1960s. And so I chose to get a master's degree in history. I left about 20 months on the table for my GI Bill that I never used to go to law school. You know, so I made choices along the way, and I have to live with those choices. But I am happy with the choices that I made because I love history. I hated history in high school. I hated history. You know, I never wanted to be reading. But now I end up being a history professor. Isn't that something?
Yes.
Simply because I was a disciplined kid, and whatever they told me I had to do, that's what I had to do. And so I did my work, you know. And I love history now. You know, I can't get away from it. I spend all day in it.
You have to tell me.
But, you know,
I believe that's who you were, but you didn't realize who you were until life chipped away at those rough edges so that that history could come out of you. That's what I believe.
Yeah.
That's right. He was fighting something that was really something that he really wanted to do or was really embedded in him. And he was fighting, running from it. But, it caught up with you, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
You can run, but you can't hide.
I had one white teacher in my high school, during my public school days, right? One. And I think they dumped him on us because he was a tough taskmaster and they didn't want him at Poly. But he became a great impact in my life. I misread him early on because he made me do a paper on the developing nations of Africa. And this was 1958. And I'm trying to say, well, what are you trying to say? You know, I ain't no African kind of thing, right? You know, that's my mindset, right? Because, look, all I know is Tarzan, right? But when I did that research paper, I studied people like Tom Mboya, Kenyatta, Ezekiel, and all of these great leaders who were fighting the liberation struggles in Africa. And I became awed by their work or what have you. And then, lo and behold, I end up in Europe, and I get to see some of these people of their work firsthand. And then, you know, the other paper he made me do in my senior year was on juvenile delinquency. And I wondered what was he trying to say. I had a guilty conscience, you know. I'll be straight up. You know, I was a father at 16, right? And my wife and I, we've been together since 1958, right? I thought he was saying something about me by making me do this paper on juvenile delinquency, right? And so I took all that stuff personal and always had problems with him because of that. But guess what? I ended up loving history. I ended up understanding the world because I had him for modern world problems. And because of him, well, I'll tell you what, at his funeral, who showed up at his funeral, there was Judge Robert Bell, the Chief Justice of the courts, right, and myself. Now, I know Reginald Francis Lewis, you know, the museum. If he had been alive, he probably would have been there, too. And I came to love him over the years because of his impact on my life. And I always felt guilty about thinking he was a racist. In fact, I even called him that, I think, probably, you know, because I said a lot of nasty things about him, right? But then he ended up being so very important to me and how I see myself today, because he would not allow me to do second-rate work. You know, I wasn't getting away with just any kind of old thing because he wanted perfection, you know. And, you know, during my day, Vince Lombardi would say that perfection is not attainable. Now, y'all remember the Green Bay Packer coach, Vince Lombardi, right? He's a great coach. He said, perfection is not attainable. But if you chase it, you will catch excellence. And so all my life, ever since that time, I've been chasing perfection. And I know it's not attainable, but hopefully I have caught excellence along the way, you know. But I look at some of those, the things that those folks taught us. Like another one was Benjamin Mays, you know, the great educator out of Atlanta University. He is the one who taught us that it is you and not your environment that will determine your destiny. It is you and not your environment. You know, it's the choices that you make along the way. And so, you know, that enabled me to stop finding excuses for failure, you know, trying to blame the system or somebody else or whatever. You know, it is the individual must understand his or her importance to their own individual development. And that's one of the things we have to get across to our children today.
Well, we are at our break, and this is going to be a 7-minute break. May is a month that honors not only National Military Appreciation Month, but we know that we celebrate Mother's Day in May. And if you are listening to the bio that I read of Daisy V. Brown, you heard that she wrote a song that the Brooklyn All-Stars sang so eloquently entitled, You Were Their Mother. So enjoy this break. Relieve yourselves, get a cup of tea, coffee, or a cold beverage, whatever you may desire. I will mute your line and unmute it at the conclusion of You Were Their Mother.
I thank God for you each day.
welcome back live on Tribe Family Channel, Call to Serve, with Daisy Brown and her guest, Mr. Clarence Tiger Davis and Mr. Donald L. Williams, Jr. And now back to our show. Hello, are you there, callers?
I'm here.
Clarence Tiger Davis, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
And Mr. Donald L. Williams, Jr., do we still have the honor of your presence?
Present and accounted for.
Y'all a piece of work. I'm the only one that is not military on this line, but I do recognize my family members that are military. And I wanted to just thank you all for your time and contributions and for your sacrifices protecting the freedom that we so carelessly take for granted. We're going to go around the room and have our final thoughts and words before we end the program with enchantment, God Bless America, favored by Daisy Brown, for that is another one of the many groups that are near and dear and acquainted with her. So please give us your final words, and then Daisy will close out the program. And thank you again for your service.
Tiger?
Oh, okay. Well, first of all, I want to thank you for continuing to be a light oftentimes in the darkest, of times. And I appreciate this opportunity to discuss some issues, because I believe that, change our mindset in terms of how we view America. If we can see the beauty that is inherent in America, we first got to see the beauty in ourselves. And this has been one of our problems, because we don't see the beauty in ourselves, we can't see the beauty in America. We have spent all of our time in the sojourn here in America building this country, and we should now reap the benefits of our labors over the last 400 years or so.
Amen.
And that's my prayer tonight.
And Sergeant Williams, I would like to, first of all, ask you a question. What is the most memorable experience that you've had since the military or during the military, because that was a question I meant to ask Tiger, but I think he told us what his was, and that was the history. But what would you say would be your most memorable situation, an award or something of that sort, or being able to assist someone?
There are several memorable occasions in my short-lived life. The most memorable, of course, is being blessed to have a son, and to be able to instill in him things that I wasn't instilled with, and to just be able to communicate with others in a way that they never thought was possible. I can give you numerous stories on different situations. After I got out of the military, I did pursue my dream of being a truck driver. And there was an instance where I was traveling across the country, and this lady was going the same direction as I. And so we spoke on the CB radio, and she communicated to me about the problems that she was having in her marriage. And her husband was her partner driver, and we spoke for quite some time. And I was driven by the Spirit to pull into a truck stop and actually be a counselor for her and her husband. But the self, flesh, says, no, I got to make this load on time. But I listened to the Spirit, and we pulled into the truck stop. And having had experience in counseling myself in my marriage, I used those very same ways of communicating with her and eventually her husband. And one of the things that was very outstanding for her to understand and for me to learn was how the tears of a woman speak volumes. And when she actually heard someone understand what she couldn't say and was able to convey that to a husband, to where his eyes opened up and said, I get it now. That just was something that I was glad to be a part of. And I did make my load, by the way, on time.
Wow.
And it was just phenomenal. So, like I said, I have many instances where life, God, the Spirit has put me in situations that left me with lifelong, happy, thoughtful, and rejuvenating memories.
That's some of the awesomeness of God, because he makes sure that we do what, you know, his will is just so awesome. And if we just give in and what they say, let go and let God, we'll be fine. Tiger, would you like to just answer that question, or are you finished for, or have you run out of
I've had so many, you know, experiences, but I think the greatest experience for me in the military was the associations that I had and seeing the world, you know, as it is. For example, I was in Europe. I left England and went to France. And on our base, you know, the people were socialists, and some of them were communists. I had always viewed those type of people with that philosophy as being people with horns, or like they were the devil or something, you know, because look, I'm 18 years old, right? I'm just coming out of high school, and all I knew was communism was bad. Look, I came to realize that it didn't make no difference whether you was a communist, socialist, or a Democrat, or whatever. You know, if you were a human being, that's what counted. And I played basketball for this town team and got to know a lot of, and I got to travel throughout that little area called Alsace-Lorraine, which I had studied back in high school, because that's where Germany first attacked in Alsace-Lorraine, because they always thought that should have been part of Germany. So I got to see all of those things that I had studied in school, and I got to see it through different eyes. But the one thing I learned, I'll never forget, in Paris, we called them les flics. That was the gendarmes or the police. I saw them beat a Senegalese to death. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, prior to that, the French friends were looking at the newspapers of dogs biting people at University of Maryland and stuff like that down the Eastern Shore or Maryland State. And they were saying, oh, Davies, you know, go back to America. You stay here in France. Everything's same, you know, that kind of stuff, right? Okay, fine. You're treating me this way, but then you're treating your own blacks the same way America's treating us. You know?
Wow.
And that opened up my eyes to the realities of the world. France treated its blacks in a certain way, the same as America treated its blacks. But then each other, they treated each other's blacks with respect. For instance, when Ralph Bunche came here to Baltimore and he went to the Mayfair movie downtown, they wouldn't let him in. He was speaking English. They saw him as a black man. He come back the next night, he's speaking French. They let him in. that opened up my eyes to what really happened with him. But that's the way of the world, you know. And I changed my whole perception of France from that. But I came to understand America a little bit better, too, you know, because all colonial powers dealt with the indigenous people in the same way. I don't care whether you're talking about the British and the Caribbean or wherever. They all dealt with their indigenous people in the same way. And so it was always the European powers that come together whenever there was a conflict anywhere in the world. They all came together on South Africa, didn't it? You know, whenever anything happened, they all come together. And so, you know, that was my comeuppance. And I appreciate having seen the world through those eyes and on a firsthand basis. Quite a learning experience. You know.
Well, thank you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying, I never held it against anybody. It's just the way the world was.
True that. Well, I would like to thank you both. I'm just so happy that we were able to have this show tonight. And I really would, before I close, or if after I close, I still would like to have some comments from our lovely, lovely, lovely Beverly Black, because none of this would have been possible without her. And I do want to tell you that I will be celebrating my birthday on the same line on April the 25th. Oh, I'm sorry, April 29th. I forgot when my birthday was. And 8 to 9, we will be on the line. And if you feel like you want to call in and say happy birthday to me, please do. But I just want to say thank you both so much for being here with us. Beverly, you know I love you. Tiger, love you, love you, love you, love you. And Sergeant Williams, I think I'm going to love you too. So you all have a blessed holiday and enjoy, and God bless everyone. Beverly.
Thanks so much.
Well, and thank you all for being here. Thank you so much, Daisy, for producing Call to Serve on Tribe Family Channel. And as we just heard, she will be celebrating her birthday on her actual birthday, April 29th, because we're always discussing the calendar, and we've been going back and forth through the week, changing days. And I have been confusing the mess out of her because we're honoring Cuba Gooding Sr. on his birthday, the 27th, but I keep drawing it over to the 26th. So I have Daisy all switched around because of Tribe Family Channel's calendar. But let it be known and clear that we have made up our minds. It is going to be on her actual birthday, April 29th of 2022, right here live on Tribe Family Channel. And there is also a book under development, Call to Serve, for the military, the medical, the service providers in the police, and also the consumer areas. We were shut down by COVID, and everything that surfaced made us even more aware of those who we are dependent upon. So we want to salute those that are in service in the capacity of all areas, military, medical, consumers, people that make sure that we have our goods and that our hospitals and schools, police departments and fire departments are running and functioning. The government, of course, the highest entity of all of the areas of service. Congratulations to I can't even say her name, somebody help me with the new Supreme Court Justice name, Jackson Brown, I will say that. Takanji Jackson Brown, is it? I'm mispronouncing it. I apologize because it was just came off of the top of my head. But lastly, we want to definitely invite your contribution to the anthology. We want you to visit gumbleforthesoulinternational.com. That is the parent company of Tribe Family Channel. We thank you again for your time, your duty, your service, and we do ask that in gratuity of Daisy Brown, if you would like to send her a card or a letter, you may do so at her call to serve offices. Address it to Call to Serve at 4700 West Rochelle Avenue, Suite 208, Las Vegas, California, excuse me, Las Vegas, Nevada, 89103. That is called to serve 4700 West Rochelle Avenue, Suite 208, Las Vegas, Nevada, 89103. Contribute to the book, Call to Serve, at www.gumbleforthesoulinternational.com. Thank you once again for your time. We appreciate you, and be blessed. Have a good evening. Good night.
God bless America.
Yes, this is America, my home. Sweet home. God bless America.
God bless America. It's the land that I love. Stand beside her. Yeah.
Everybody sing.